And now it is Monday morning. Tomorrow is election day for those that did not vote early. So you're getting your last 10 minutes with one of the potential mayors of New York City. And that is my friend, Eric Adams. Welcome to the show again, Eric.
Thank you so much. It's good being on with you.
So let's discuss what you see as the most important issue in the race. And I think the two issues are the safety, public safety, which is horrendous, and the economy, which is getting a little bit better, but still has a long way to go. Public safety, what are you going to do to make us all safe and secure?
Well, actually, they're connected together. The public safety and the economy is connected. And I have been stating this on the campaign trail over and over again. The prerequisite to prosperity is public safety. And if we're not safe as a city, we're not going to get tourism back. We're going to lose the 65,000 high-income earners that are leaving our city. And no one wants to get on the subways and reoccupy the office buildings in our central business district. And so I'm going to zero in on gun violence. We're going to address the homeless problem, particularly mental health in our subway system. And we're going to go after the gangs in the city to make this a place where people are safe to live.
There is no question. People do not realize it, but in 2019, 66 million people came to visit New York City. Can you imagine? 66 million people spent money in New York City. And they're not going to come if they don't feel safe.
So true. Imagine if you're a tourist and you hear about a three-year-old being shot in Times Square. Or if you, one of our largest groups of tourists comes from China. With the hate crimes you're seeing on our Asian New Yorkers, that's going to impact tourism and travelers both domestically and internationally. It's all tied together. It's part of our entire financial ecosystem, and the foundation of that ecosystem is public safety.
And there's also no question that, number one, if you don't feel safe, you don't want to run your business here. But you also need you also need financial incentives. The state has done so much damage by increasing the tax on uber-wealthy people, okay? The billionaires, as they like to call it. But, of course, the number keeps dropping, and it always drops. And every time they pass a tax, which they say is for 3-4 years, becomes forever. That's New York State. So, but what they're also doing is that they did it at a time when they really didn't need the money. You know, so they passed this in March of last year, everybody would have understood. But when they passed it, they had the federal money. And what happens when the taxes start to go down because people are leaving? What can you do to incentivize these people, these Uber billionaires, when they're not all Uber billionaires because the tax starts already at $2 million? And one last thing, which I remember when they first started the ATM, the alternate minimum tax, it was $150,000. They said, oh, it's only the rich, rich people that get ensnared. But since they never raised the amount, middle class people got ensnared. What most of it is on the state level. What can you do on the city level?
Well, the city, we don't control the taxes, of course, on the state level, the income taxes. We here in the city deal with property taxes, and that is what we must do. We have an unfair property tax system that is hard on everyday New Yorkers, middle class New Yorkers. We're going to create a fairer system. And even when we do the income taxes on the state level, it's just sunset once we become, we have stabilized ourselves after COVID as we cycled out. The goal is not to overburden New Yorkers. Even those who are considered high-income earners, there's only 65,000 that are paying 51% of our income taxes. They're doing their job and helping New York navigate through this. We must do our job as New Yorkers to ensure that we spend the dollars correctly. And right now, government has not been doing that. We are going to be good keepers of tax dollars and stop the inefficiencies in our city.
Overtime and the pension abuse that goes with it, because so much of that overtime is used by people who are in the last 2 years before retirement. Can it be controlled? Is it a possibility?
Yes, it can. We stay in a crisis mode all the time in this city, and we're going to cycle out of a crisis mode. I say this to Leon all the time. Our city is dysfunctional. We create the crises in this city over and over again by how we don't ensure our agencies are aligned. Our city is too expensive, too bureaucratic, and too difficult to do business in. We hurt small businesses far too often. I'm going to refocus this attention to become a city that's fair for all New Yorkers and promote a place where people want to do business in the city.
You need to promote that the building department, where I see this constantly with some of my tenants, where they go, first off, they always have to hire an expediter because nobody knows what to say, what to go, where to go. The city needs to become user-friendly so that the guy that wants to open up a store doesn't have to spend thousands of dollars and then find out halfway through, oh, nobody told you, but you need a permit for that too. And they should be calling in the health department if you're opening a restaurant. There should be an ombudsman out there. Okay, there needs to be an ombudsman out there that's going to go ahead and say, guys, we're going to help you open the store. We're going to help you open your business.
So true. So true. Our expediter is going to be the city of New York. We're going to incentivize moving projects through. Right now, we don't incentivize it. People don't feel the need or the urgency to move projects through. And we're going to change that. I'm going to judge my agencies on how we get businesses up and operating, and not judge them on how we close businesses down. We need people hired, employed, to pay into our tax pool so that we can continue to grow and thrive as a city.
You have an opportunity tomorrow to make your voice heard. Tomorrow is the last day. Tomorrow is election day. Make no mistake. If you don't vote tomorrow, November, you feel like voting, don't bother to go, because whoever wins, you like that, Eric, right? Well, although with ranked choice, we may not know till November who the winner is anyway. Between absentee and ranked choice, it may take a few days for us to find out who the winner is. But tomorrow is the last day, the last opportunity that you have to go out there and make your voices heard, and make no mistake, every single voice is important. Because of ranked choice, you really have a tremendous voice, much more than in the past. Go out and vote. Eric, thank you very much for coming back on the show. Day before Election Day, you must be running 24 hours.
Yes, it is, brother. And we are hitting the ground hard, but we're used to working hard. Thank you very much.
So now I have with me Catherine Garcia, who came from behind, all the way behind, and is one of the leading contenders to become the mayor of this great city. So first off, Catherine, welcome to the show once more.
Oh, thank you so much for having me again.
I need to tell you, you've been so impressive to everybody. And, in my community, you cannot imagine how people are impressed with you. Because you're a straight talker, you understand the issues, and you understand what it means to run a city. You've been doing that for more years than we will admit to here publicly, but you've been involved in running the city. But the biggest issues on everybody's mind now is safety and security, feeling safe, not feeling threatened, especially in the Jewish community with anti-Semitic incidents, or if you're in the Asian community with anti-Asian incidents. But feeling safe walking on the street, not even with the yarmulke, but with the yarmulke for sure. What are you going to do to get us to the point where now crime is, I don't want to say out of hand, because out of hand was the 70s and 80s and 90s. In 1991, there were 2,251 people murdered in New York City. But the feeling that people have is like that.
Oh, we have to get guns off the street and have smart policing. I'm committed to getting 10,000 guns off the street in my first year, with gun buybacks, with doubling the size of the gun suppression division, which does the investigative work, with really using the data to to follow where we are having incidents. And so I also do encourage particularly folks who are experiencing hate crimes to report it so that we have officers in the right locations to protect the Jewish community and the Asian community now. But, you know, my concern is what's the next community
right.
that's going to be targeted?
No question. No question. When they came for it, it was a famous, I forget who it was, writer who wrote about World War II. They came for the Jews. I didn't say anything. Then they came for the Catholics. I wasn't Catholic. I didn't say anything. And so on until they came for him. So there's no question that when hatred is in force, it eventually gets to everybody.
It does. And we have to be protecting everyone, particularly people who are being targeted. And for Jews, those are who display signs of their religion. And if people are starting to put their Jewish star necklace under their shirt when they're out, that's a real problem.
Or wearing a baseball cap because they don't want to mm-hmm. show their yarmulke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that is the exact opposite of the city we need to be.
Right. I see that a lot more walking around. I was in Long Island the last couple of days, different times, and I see a lot more baseball caps on guys that I know would normally be wearing yarmulkes. But they really are nervous. But it's not just anti-Semitism. It's just crime in general that just seems to be getting the guns off the street has got to be critical. Chasing the guns, where they're coming from. New York has maybe the toughest gun laws in the country. I don't know, toughest or pretty close to the toughest. But you can bring it in from anywhere else.
And we have to work with our federal partners to stop the flow of guns into the city, because we know we don't have a gun manufacturer here. They're coming from the south. They're coming up the iron pipeline. And we know that ATF and the FBI need to be part of our solution, but we also need to work with our DAs to have those cases move quickly so that they are going to jail when they are caught.
Right now, if they're caught under the bail laws, if they're just caught with a gun in their possession, are they basically let out on bail?
It is a little bit dependent on whether or not that the judge believes that they will return to court. If they will return to court, then they can end up not having cash bail. But gun violations are ones that they can, they're more likely to be able to require cash bail. But it is very complicated about how this was done and what ends up giving the judges discretion or no discretion.
Right. So would you be up in Albany trying to change some of those laws, giving the judges more discretion than they have now?
Yes. And we have to follow the data. What are we seeing about recidivism when people are out?
They're going back to crime. And that's a problem.
We have to be addressing that, but we also have to, you know, we don't want anyone staying on Rikers just because they're poor.
Right.
That's not the right reason to leave them on Rikers Island. Yeah.
But they should, if they are any kind of a threat, they should be there and they should be held on bail. That they can't, that they can't achieve, but at least where it would hurt if they took off. Let's talk about the economy. Economy is the second most important issue. In my opinion, and I think everybody's opinion, because if the economy doesn't really pick up and we don't get tourists back, which is definitely impacted by crime also, and the city's going to have a very difficult time in 2-3 years when the federal funds dry up.
Supporting this economy and really supporting small businesses who are 50% of our private sector employment is critical. We've got to get them reopened. We've got to keep them open. That's cutting the bureaucracy with a one-city permit, but also is giving them access to capital and promoting our restaurant sector in particular with a Rediscover NYC plan so that we are our own first tourists as we wait for particularly international tourism to come back. So some of those countries are still banned from having their citizens come to the city.
Let's talk about One Stop. Because I think that's something that, you know, you just glossed over. I think that's a major part that really says a lot. What are you going to do one-stop permitting?
One-stop permitting is a simple permit for small businesses, and then we will, on the back end, take care of moving it between the agencies so that you don't have to worry about you've got to go to the buildings department, then you've got to go to the fire department, then you've got to go to the consumer affairs, that it, all the information is
in
there.
Let's not forget the health department.
And the health department. All of the information is in there, and we're done. The agencies move it between themselves. They have to do their checks. We get it back to you in 30 days.
That would be unbelievable because it can take people now 90 to 120 days to open up their small business, to get a store, to get a building department permit. It's just incredible. And that's why, you know, you just glossed over it, but because that's how your mind thinks. Your mind is, you know, you're ready on the next project because that project I took care of. Okay, just like you did the meals, took care of it. So yeah, I'm not talking about it. You didn't mention the meals once. That you produced a million meals a day.
During COVID, during the height of COVID, we built the program. It to date has now delivered over 230 million meals to people who are sick or who are homebound. Most of that demand was during the height of COVID. And we literally put that together over a weekend.
You ramped up and you produced a million meals a day. And when I walk on the street, I actually can see some of those people, the ones that had a lot of those meals. That's one thing that's good about COVID is people are now out and, you know, doing exercise. Last thoughts before we sign off.
I want everyone to get out to the polls. We need somebody who's going to roll up their sleeves and just work for this city and bring us back strong and bring us together as New Yorkers, because that's how we come out of COVID really positively. And I'm not just running for the title of mayor. I'm running to do the job of mayor.
And this is not your stepping stone to be a president of the United States.
No. Absolutely not. I will not be in Iowa, even though I'm sure it's a lovely place.
You may visit it after you retire. So just remember.
After I retire.
Right. Tomorrow is the last day to actually go and vote. I voted early. And for those that did not vote early, every single vote is critical. And because of ranked choice voting, it becomes much more critical that you go out and vote and you pick the top 3 to 5. I recommend picking only 3 people and making an impact with your vote. Catherine, thank you once more for coming on my show. And I'd like to wish you a lot of luck tomorrow. But we probably won't know too close to November who the winner of the primary was now.
I know patience is not one of our virtues, but we're going to have to practice it.
But you're going to have to practice it. It will take a while to get ranked choice and and all the other filings. You know the. Okay. Thank you again for appearing.
Thank you so much. I'm thrilled to have been on again.
So now I have with me somebody who's running for controller, David Weppern, who I've known for some 20 years. And in my trips up to Albany, whenever we need to put together a minion, we can always count on David because he's always hunting to find a minion in Albany also. Unless we're up there, it's kind of hard to find a minion up in Albany. But we're not talking about Albany today. We're talking about the controller's race. And for people who don't understand, the controller is the second most important job in New York City. David, first off, welcome to the show.
Great to be here, Leon. Thanks for having me.
Controller, is that the second most important job?
I think it is.
You control, first off, how much money do you control in the pension funds?
There are $254 billion in the pension funds.
Just don't tell me exactly how many pennies. 254 is close enough, right? So you're taking on the job of trying to grow that $254 billion, which supports all the city workers' pensions. Don't you think that some people should have a financial background to take on that job? Do you have any sort of a financial background? A rhetorical question, because I know the answer. But go ahead.
Yeah, I'm an attorney by training, but I served as deputy superintendent or deputy commissioner of banking for New York State under Governor Mario Cuomo for 4 years. And then I went on to a 25-year career in public finance, in municipal finance, floating bond issues for infrastructure needs, for for building housing, for building hospitals, building schools. Very relevant experience to the public finance division in the comptroller's office.
You also sat on the finance boards in the city.
I also was secretary of the banking board when I was deputy superintendent of banking for New York State, and I actually chaired the Securities Industry Association New York District, overlapping with my Wall Street career for 3 years, non-paid, elected by my industry colleagues.
So you have a financial background. I think that's important. You also have to watch all the you have to pass every single contract that the city signs. So I guess your lawyer.
That is correct.
Background will help on that. People don't realize, because generally, I mean, besides complaining about city ideas, also to not just pass on them, but to actually audit every single agency is part of your requirement.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, the city charter only requires the comptroller to audit some aspect of every agency once every 4 years. And I've been saying that's ridiculous. It should be every year. We should be concentrating on auditing every agency and auditing the outside contracts of the city, because about 20% of the city budget are outside contracts, many of which have never been audited, and many of them are very large contracts. For example, there was a contract for homeless shelters in the Bronx, got a lot of publicity in the New York Times. The Bronx Parent Housing Network, which was a contract of about $250 million for homeless shelters. It was run by a corrupt individual, Victor Rivera, who was commingling for-profit and not-for-profit money, and he was sexually assaulting women in the homeless shelter. Luckily, that contract was subsequently terminated after an investigation by the New York Times.
You need to check every year. Yeah, you need to audit every year. You would have caught that commingling of funds. Another issue that I think people don't realize, especially with BDS, really, I think, pretty strong, you know, with especially on the left side of on the leftist, where there are a lot of people in government today that are in the Democratic Party, not centrist, but really far out left. How much control do you, as a controller, have on investing in Israel, which there's a lot of the money that's in the pension funds? I wouldn't know what percentage, but I know that New York City is a major investor in Israel bonds and in Israel companies. How much control do you have over that, and what's your position on that?
Well, my position is that Israel bonds are probably the safest investments the city can make. They've been expanded at both the state level under control of DiNapoli, as well as the city level, so I would certainly look to expand it, certainly not reduce it. But as far as the Democratic Party goes, you know, I'm very concerned about the Democratic Socialist movement in the Democratic Party and the anti-Israel bias that has come. I mean, you know, it's something that's mind-boggling to me, being, you know, a very pro-Israel, you know, Zionist for my entire life, and to see the trend on the left of the Democratic Party, which really has anti-Semitic overtones when it comes to the BDS movement and Democratic Socialists. I've been saying everywhere that, you know, the BDS movement is anti-Semitic because they're singling out the only country in the Mideast that's a true democracy and the only Jewish country in the world. And what about all the human rights violators of so many other countries in the region?
Not even in the region. China.
China, Korea, it goes on, and no one's singling out them for a boycott. It's clearly anti-Semitic, singling out the only Jewish country in the world.
Right. I don't know if you're aware, there's only one Jewish country in the world. Do you know that there are 19 countries in the world, and a lot of them in Europe, socialist Europe, but very, very liberal Europe, that are actually Christian countries by design, and that openly say they are a Christian country, and yet nobody says anything about being a Christian country, only about being a Jewish country. Well, let's get back to the city. So BDS is not something that we have to be in the least bit concerned with. You, I didn't think so, but I need to ask the questions. Public safety, which is not under the controller, But at the end of the day, if you want the economy, and you need the economy to work, because otherwise, what are you controlling? Public safety is a major issue. What can you, as a controller, and what can you suggest to the mayor to do to make the city safer than it is today?
Well, you know, when we had a major crime problem in the beginning of the 90s, it was the city and the state that got together with the Safe Streets, Safe City program.
That was under Mayor?
Under Dinkins.
That's right. Never gets credit. That was under Mayor Dinkins.
And Peter Vallone, the senior, was the Speaker of the House.
Of the City Council.
My late father, Saul Weprin, was Speaker in the Assembly. And they all were involved in hiring 5,000 new police officers in New York City, as well as mental health professionals as well. So I know a lot of this defund the police movement, which I've been speaking out against, and a number of my opponents actually led the fight for the defund the police movement. They always say, we don't need more police. We need social workers. We need guidance counselors. We need people dealing with mental illness. They actually, with Safe Streets, Safe City, the main part of the program was hiring 5,000 new police officers, but they also dealt with the other issues as well. I think you need both. But the answer is not to have less police. The answer is to have more police. And we've already seen a huge increase in crime and gun violence throughout the five boroughs. And that's directly attributed, in my opinion, to losing 3,000 police officers from a year ago. At least 1,000 with the budget last year, cutting $1 billion
budget. Cutting out one academy, you know.
Cutting out that academy, plus also police officers retiring and not being replaced.
Because they don't feel appreciated. Do you blame them?
Exactly.
Do you blame them when they walk on the street and they see something happening and they have to say to themselves, if I interfere, am I putting not only my life, which they do all the time, at risk, am I putting my job at risk because I made the wrong decision or what might be viewed as the wrong decision?
Absolutely, and that's one of the reasons I've been saying that, and that's one of the reasons why I've been endorsed by all five police unions, from the PBA, which is the largest, the detectives, the sergeants, the lieutenants, and the captains. Five separate police unions.
I think that's all of them, right? There aren't any more.
All of them. All five police unions have endorsed my candidacy for controller.
Okay, so that's always a positive, especially in our community where the police are really appreciated. We look up to the police. We say thank you to the police. And if you don't, when you see a police officer, tell them thank you. When I see, sometimes when I come in the morning, I open the synagogue at 5:05, and sometimes there's a police car sitting there, you know, waiting for me. I said, thank you for being there, thank you for waiting, and thank you for always being there for us. It's really important that we say thank you. So many other people, I hate to say it, but they almost spit at them, and they don't deserve it. Nobody becomes a policeman to be a tough guy. Everybody becomes a policeman because he wants to be better. David, last thing, what would you like to tell the public before Election Day tomorrow? The final day of election.
I'd like
day.
To tell everybody this is a very important election for both mayor and controller and city council. And it's important that everybody, certainly if they're registered Democrats, but if they really want to have a decision on who the next controller is going to be in my case, please come out to vote on Tuesday or through early voting. And I'm the only candidate that has the relevant finance experience, both public and private sector. And we're going to be in a major fiscal crisis, maybe the worst fiscal crisis in the history of the city of New York, because we did get aid in the billions from Washington this year. So we don't have a problem this year with the budget, but it was a one-shot deal. And we're going to have a $4 to $5 billion deficit for the next 4 years after that. And we don't want to go back to the 70s where we had budget cuts and layoffs. And that's why you need a controller that's going to hit the ground running. And also a controller that's going to invest the pension fund, not for political purposes and not for, to make
but to make money,
but
to make money,
but to get the best returns on the asset.
So, David, thank you. Good luck for tomorrow, which is the last day of voting. Tomorrow, Tuesday, for those who did not vote early, please go out and do so.